Good morning, everyone. Today's daf is daf Lamed Tes in Avodah Zarah. We're on Lamed Ches Amud Beis, and we're about 10 lines from the top of the page. We're starting with the words Amar Ravina. It's first word in the line is Bi'ado V'Kochavim, and then it goes to Amar Ravina. We're finishing up the second parak of Avodah Zarah between today and tomorrow. God willing, we'll finish. We have been spending a day on Bishul Akum. We talked yesterday about the Gzera Bishul Akum. The opinion of Tosus is that this is an old Gzera. This is older than bread. That's why the Gemara yesterday looked for a pasuk to find out where, in fact, the Torah talks about Bishul Akum. The Torah does not actually talk about Bishul Akum, but the fact that the Gemara was even searching for such a pasuk is indicative of the fact that this is an old Gzera, an old and established Gzera. That's what Tosus writes back on Lamed Zayin Amud Beis. And then on Lamed Ches Siman Aleph, we had a debate between Rashi and Tosfos as to why Bishul Akum is prohibited. A non-Jew cooks food, and you see him cooking, and you know all the products are kosher, and yet it's going to be asur, it's going to be rabbinically prohibited. Why would that be? So Rashi over here interestingly writes that it has to do with Shami Yachlin Davartame, because he may add non-kosher to the food. Tosfos points out that wasn't Rashi back in the Mishnah. Rashi in the Mishnah said it has to do with chasus, it has to do with intermarriage, which is very consistent to what we've been discussing all throughout. The oil, the wine, it's all about intermarriage, so presumably Bishul Akum is also about intermarriage as well. Tosfos is of a strong position that this is as well about chasus, it's about intermarriage as well. And that's Rashi and Tosfos. Tosfos brought in an opinion which is rejected la halacha, that if the non-Jew is in your house and cooking in your house, then that's fine. But Tosfos, Rabbi Natan, strongly objects to such a kula, such a leniency. The Gemara did talk about two leniencies when it comes to Bishul Akum. One leniency was kol shenechal kmo shehu chai, if it could be eaten in its raw state and the non-Jew cooks it, so that would be fine, that's acceptable. The Gemara brings down a second heter, that if it's einu nechal shulchan malachim, if it's not brought on the king's table, that's also going to be permissible. So regular food, common food, is einu ochal shulchan malachim, and therefore it's going to be permissible, right? And that's, as I pointed out yesterday, that second heter, it's tough to fit that into Rashi he may add non-kosher food. If that really is the concern, it shouldn't make a difference whether it's a significant food or an insignificant food. Okay, and then we talked about what part of the cooking process does the Jew need to be involved with in order to remove the Bishul Akum prohibition. So if the Jew started the cooking, the Gemara says that's for sure okay. Even if the non-Jew accelerated the cooking process, that's still okay. We talked about what if the non-Jew started the cooking process and the Jew finished, the Gemara says that's also okay. The Gemara employed a kavachomer. We talked yesterday about trying to understand the kavachomer. It's a difficult kavachomer to understand. And then I raise the issue, which the Gemara doesn't really talk about, but It's again, in Lumdus, it's an interesting issue. What if the non-Jew cooked it up to the point of Michael ben Drusai, which is either a third or half cooked, and then you get involved after that? So you did get involved, but you got involved after it was, quote-unquote, it was legally cooked. So are you going to save the day by getting involved after that? So I pointed out the Rishonim debate that issue. The Gemara does not discuss that issue. Good. Okay, that's a summary of yesterday. Let's move on to today. Again, about 10 lines down, I'm a Ravina. Hilchasa. Ravina says, here's the following halacha. I rifta deshagor v'kochavim v'afa Yisrael. Inam ishagor Yisrael v'afa v'kochavim. Inam ishagor v'kochavim v'afa v'kochavim. V'asa Yisrael v'chata b'chitui shapir dami. So here the Gemara quotes the name of Ravina. If the Jew has any involvement, even if he stokes the coal shapir dami, it's going to be permissible. Okay? Now from this Gemara, you get the sense of, oh, now I get it. Because what happens in every restaurant, what happens is that you have a mashkiach come in, light the fire. That's what we would call chata b'chitui. He stokes the coals. He turns the fuel on, turns the fire on. And Ravina says, that's fine, that's acceptable. And that's how it is, that all the food cooked in the restaurant, even though they're cooked by non-Jews, is not Bishul Akum because we started the fire. So just so you should know, it's controversial. With that, not a bad controversy, but it's subject to a debate. Because if you read our Gemara carefully, you'll notice the Gemara says, not talking about cooking. The Gemara is talking about bread. The Gemara says, Hilchasa harifta deshaga ovi kochavim. The Gemara says that leniency applies to bread. Can we take that leniency of bread and apply to all other cooked foods? Now again, go back to Tosfos that we did yesterday. Tosfos says that Bishalakum and Pasakum are two different gezeiras. And Tosfos says that the Pasakum, we were lenient about that, but we might not necessarily have been lenient when it comes to Bishalakum. It's the opinion of the Shulchan Aruch that this heter of stoking the coals, that's only for bread. That's not going to work for Bishalakum. Right, so the Shulchan Aruch is of the opinion that in order for it not to be Bishalakum, so a Jew has to actually be involved in part of the actual cooking. Okay, there are no Sephardim here in the room, which right now is a good thing, but you'll understand why, because this comes up all the time in a restaurant where they're relying on the Ramah. The Ramah says that stoking the coals is fine, removes the Bishalakum prohibition. Right? In other words, the Ramah takes our Gemara and translates it both to Pas and to Bishul. So for us, it's fine. But for a follower of the Shulchan Aruch, not the Ramah, you know, for them, they have to be more involved. They have to be more involved in the cooking process. The stoking of the coals is not going to be enough. Okay, it's...
But the previous Gemara, the Chiddush,
right. Yeah, but but starting though means putting the food on the fire. Even when the Gemara talked about starting, the Gemara said putting the act of putting the food on the fire.
Not lighting the fire.
Lighting the fire is not cooking. Lighting the fire is just lighting a fire.
But from the fact that Gemara went back to, despite what you said about the toast, the fact that Gemara has just been talking about Mishael Alcorn.
Right, no, that right.
And went back to Pasuk.
Right, correct. No, that's correct. That's a very fair point, and that's what. Then the Ramah would say that's absolutely correct. That thinking is absolutely correct. But I'm telling you, the Shulchan Aruch does not agree. Okay, let's go. Let's continue. Dag Maliach. So salted fish, Chizkishar, Rav Yochanan Aser. So that's the machlokus between the Amorayim as to whether or not that's prohibited. So interestingly enough, Rav Yochanan says it's not prohibited. Now salting, like we said yesterday, salting is fine. Salting is not cooking. So that, fine that, but Rav Yochanan disagrees. Rav Yochanan says that salting, for this fish, Rashi writes two simple words, Zehu Bishulo. This is the act of cooking for this particular food. And consequently, this salting in this case is going to be considered an act of cooking. Beitza Tzluya, a roasted egg, Bar Kapar Shar Rav Yochanan Aser. This is also interesting. A roasted egg. Now, Bar Kapar's position is that it's permissible. Now, why? So it's funny, without Rashi, I would have said that it's not significant food. It's just not it's not a king's food. It's Eino Ola Shulchan Malachim. Maybe you can argue, although I'm not sure if this is a good one, maybe you can argue Nechal Kamoshu Chai, that it can be eaten raw. You know, in the... in the Rocky movies, Rashi chooses neither pshat. Rashi writes, Bar Kapar Shari, Ho Uvalia Ochel Dide Velo Naga Ovikochavim Beuchla. Rashi gives a very strange pshat. I'll translate, but I don't understand. Rashi says, "Well, he didn't touch the food, right? There was a shell on it, and he didn't. But the guy didn't actually touch the food." Okay, I'm the first to admit I don't understand. What does that have to do with anything?
In other words, they use touch the edible portion.
I do understand that, but still, right? If it's not edible raw, and if it's an and if
well,
it's a
Rashi's reason is because he's got something treif in it, right?
Rashi's correct, and over here, because there's a shell around it, so it's impregnable. You can't. There's nothing to add to the end. But that doesn't, again, even if that's true, it still doesn't matter. You can add non-kosher food to the boiling water, and that will impart taste into the egg. Look, I'm admitting, I don't understand Rashi.
Maybe not if it's roasted, though.
Okay.
It's not being boiled, it's being roasted, so maybe...
These are things that I'm going to be saying after reading Rashi. But like, in other words, before having read Rashi, I would never have said, oh, it's a shell, and that makes it okay.
Yeah.
But Rashi forces us forces us into that position, and then we have to say some Shan Rashi. And you're right. It just you see, I'm struggling. It's not an easy Rashi.
Maybe the fire is like a kashering process.
Perhaps, but this is about Bishalakum, which as Aaron points out correctly, according to Rashi, it's also a kashrus issue. You know, treif versus not treif, but this is really more bishul hakam. Okay, anyway, we don't pass like bar kapara, but it's certainly interesting, and the Rashi makes it even more interesting, but let's move on. So Rav Yochanan Aser, and Rav Yochanan says, no, it's Aser, meaning an egg, a roasted egg. You can't eat a roasted egg roasted by a non-Jew. That's cooking. It's bishul hakam. Ki Aser Rav Dimi Amar Echad Dag Melech Ve'echad Beit Tzluya Chizkiya Bar Kapara Shor Rav Yochanan Aser. Okay, so the Gemara brings in various opinions amongst the Amoraim, whether it's Mutter, whether it's Aser. Rav Chia Parva Ikla Lebe Reish Kalusa. Okay, goes to the house of Reish Kalusa, Amrulay Beit Tzluya Mai. So they ask him, what's your feelings about roasted eggs? Can a non-Jew roast an egg and you can eat it? Is that possible? Amrulahu Chizkiya Bar Kapara Shor Rav Yochanan Aser Ve'ein Rav Shalecha B'makom Shnayim. Okay, so he said 2-1. Two Amoraim say it's okay. One Amora says it's not okay. And it's 2-1. I don't know how that works, obviously, because are they the only opinions out there? They're, you know, we're just going to ignore everything else. Just look at those two. I'm not sure how that works, but fine. 2-1. So Amalu Rav Zvid, lo tatsitsulei. So Rav Zvid, who's standing there in the house of the Reish Kalusa, listening to this logic of 2-1, and Rav Zvid says, no. In fact, I have a tradition from Abaye, who says that the halacha is like Rav Yochanan. So in other words, you cannot eat a roasted egg. Now, Reish Kalusa didn't like that psak. Now, how do I know that? Well, because I just read ahead the next two lines of Gemara. Next two lines of Gemara, by the way, are... You know, I mentioned already a couple things this morning that are difficult to explain. This next two lines of Gemara are very difficult to explain. Watch me struggle with this. Ashkuya neguta dechala v'nach nafshei. So what did they do to the Rav Zvid? In other words, he just told the house of the Reish Kalusa, you can't eat a roasted egg roasted by a non-Jew. It's subject to bishul hakam. So what they did is they give him neguta dechala. Neguta, Rashi says, some sort of vinegar. Well, chala is vinegar. But Hanach the Beresh Kalusa de lo hava malam ishum de achme alayu. Sorry, no Rashi. No, I'm sorry. It's not Rashi. It's the side of the Gemara. It's the right kosho chometz, right? Some cup of vinegar. Apparently, it was very acidic. It was very strong. Okay, it was like a poison. V'nach nafshei and Rav Zvid died. The simple pshat of the Gemara is that they poisoned Rav Zvid. Okay, because he told them no. Okay, that's rush. That's rough. That's definitely rough. Tanu Rabbanan. Hakafrisim v'hakaplotos v'hametalia v'hachamim v'haklaya shlehem mutarin. Beit Tzluya asur. The Gemara gives a list of things which are going to be permissible, but the roasted egg is going to be prohibited. Shemen, Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, ubeis tu nirnim no'olav, v'hitiruhu. When it comes to oils, to Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, and his beis tu were matir it. Now I know, by the way, I've been trained now for a couple of days to say that every time it's Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, it's really Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya, but I will admit though, it is strange, almost every single time it comes up in the form as Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi. I have a funny feeling that Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi has something to do with it, even though, you know, Rashi's insistent that it's really his grandson. Tanya, he amalya, he pashalya, he shata. When we're talking about himtalya, it's the same thing as pashalya, it's the same thing as shiata. Now that's great for anyone who knows what those things are. My shiata, amar rabba babachana, amar yochanan harabin shnin denafik hai uvdam in Mitzrayim. So the Gemara is going to tell a story from Egypt about what shiata is. But before telling the story, the Gemara just simply tells us when it happened. So according to one version, it happened 40 years ago. Rabba Babachana, Didei Amar, Hashif Nishnin, Denafik Hayuvdom, in Mitzrayim. He says it happened 60 years ago in Egypt. Avlo Peliga, the Gemara points out, here 40 and 60 are not a machlokas. In other words, when they're accounting how many years ago it happened, Mar Bishnei Maisu, each one was just simply going relative to when they told the story, but they're telling the same story. It's the same account. Maisu Bizra de Karpisa, U Bizra de Kisna, U Bizra de Shavlelisa. So they brought seeds of carpus, seeds of flax, seeds of Shavalisa. The Tarle Bahadi Hadade, they soaked them together, Bipshure, in warm water. The Shafkule Ad de Mikabel, Umaisa Chatzve Chadate. Then, after soaking the seeds, now the seeds are really soft, they brought in shards of pottery, Umalule Maya, filled it with water, barrels of pottery, filled it with water, Vatara Bay Gargishna, Umidafkin Bay, and then they took the seeds and they stuck it to the side of the wall, the pottery, so the seeds are growing now from the earthenware. Vaila Labe Bane, and then they took it into the bathhouse. Okay, so seeds right now. Various different types of seeds. Adenafku Milav Lave Vaachli Minayhu. Now they go into the bathhouse, they come out, and the seeds started growing. Now that's a long bath. An hour, 2 hours, 2 days. Let's assume it was a regular bath of, I don't know how long your baths are, but you know, a half an hour, whatever the case is. It is strange that we're telling a story about how seeds grew in an hour. Right? That's a strange story. After they ate it, the kairi, they became cold, they got like a chill. From their head all the way down to the toenail of their feet. Okay, they got a chill from eating these sprouts. Amrav Ashi, Amali Rabbi Chanina, Milin. So now, story, true story or not a true story? So Rav Ashi quotes the name of Chanina, Milin. These are words, not a true story. The Amrila, now some have a different version of what he said about the story, Bimilin, with words. What does that mean? With words, Rashi explains, Ayyidei Divrei Lacha Shokshafim Hein Osin. No, true story, how did it grow? It grew using witchcraft and sorcery and some sort of incantation. Egypt, by the way, had that, meaning that stuff went in Egypt. Right? Just see the beginning of Sefer Shmos, and you're going to see the Chartumei Mitzrayim. They went for that stuff. Anyway, through the story, the Gemara was trying to give us some sort of indication of what the Shiata was. Okay, continuing in the Gemara. Tana Rabbanan, Akus Mashal Avdi Kocha Meshuch Muhammad B'Yorah Gedola Aser B'Yorah Ketana Mutter. Alright, and now from this point forward, the Gemara is going to basically give us a list of foods. What if these foods were cooked by a non-Jew? Subject to Bishul Akam or not subject to Bishul Akam? And interestingly enough, our main focus is going to be on the issue of Bishul Akam. A sidebar, an interesting one at that, is going to be the issue of no Saint Tam Levgam. Okay? We know that in the reason why something that was cooked in non-kosher pots is subject to being non-kosher is because the taste of the non-kosher pot, the taste of the non-kosher, I should say, that's imbued in the pot is going to be extracted through the heat in the water, and it's going to go into the food that's being cooked. Okay, what we simply call blia, an absorption of taste. However, through these gemaras, even though these objects are going to be cooked in non-kosher pots, it's going to be, under certain circumstances, acceptable because of the concept of no Saint Tam Levgam. Now, I just got to be clear about this. No Saint Tam Levgam is coming up later on in the Masechta. We'll talk much more about no Saint Tam Levgam. But when we talk about it, however, it comes up in one of two formats. Either it means that the absorbed taste in the pot is an old taste, right? More than 24 hours old. And so at that point in time, it becomes rancid, regardless of what it was. After 24 hours, the taste becomes rancid. That's one form of no Saint Tam Levgam. There's another form as well, which is the food is here. It just happens to be that the combination of this food and that food is a terrible combination. It doesn't enhance the flavor of the food. In fact, just the opposite. It detracts from the flavor of the food. That's another form of no Saint Tam Levgam. Okay? And again, assuming, and it is an assumption, assuming that the two foods and the two flavors do not do well together, so it could very well be that you could just simply ignore the taste of the non-kosher. I'll give you a simple example of what I mean in that second format. Shulchan Aruch writes the following, and it's based on a Gemara that's coming up later in Avodah Zarah. What if a rat or a rodent falls into beer? Right? And the taste of that rodent now is imbued into the beer. Now the rodent is obviously a non-kosher animal, right? You could take the rodent out and drink the beer. What? isn't there non-kosher taste in the vat of the beer? No Saint Tam Levgam. That taste is not a pleasant taste. It's a foul taste. And so therefore the beer is going to be mutter. That's another form of no Saint Tam Levgam. Okay, just be aware that it's just good information to know. No Saint Tam Levgam comes in those two types of forms. All right, let's move. Tanu Rabbanan, Kus Mashov de Kocham Sheikh Muhammad, a Kuspan. I don't know what a lot of these things are. Solar Shal Tamarim, residue of the dates. Right, you made dates, you turned dates into beer and the dregs, I guess you would call them. The dregs are the dates. So what they used to do is they used to cook them and then eat them. Real recycling. So Kusma Shofti Kocham Shuch Muhammad Biyarakidol Asr Biyarakatana Mutta, depends on whether it was cooked in a large pot or a small pot. Ezu Yarakatana, what does that mean, small pot? Amar Avyanai, Koshein Sipur Dor Yachuli Kanas Besocha. It means that it was such a small pot that a bird couldn't get inside, meaning so that the only thing that was cooked in this pot is going to be the dates, the residue dates. So the Gemara says, what? Vidilma Admuye Admua. The Aile, what are you talking about? You're not concerned that maybe they cut the bird up and they put the bird into the pot piecemeal? Like, why aren't you concerned about that? The Gemara says, because we're talking about such a small pot that even if I cut it, it still wouldn't fit inside. The Hatanya, the Gemara says, again, I'm not understanding. We have a Braisa. The Braisa says that under any circumstance, whether it's a small or large pot, it's going to be mutter. Lokasha command amar nosen tam levgam aser ha command amar nosen tam levgam mutter. Gemara says, subject to the machlokus of nosen tam levgam. Now, I told you a couple days ago, the general consensus of the Gemara is nosen tam levgam is mutter. There is, however, opinions out there in the Gemara, like you see right now, that maintain that nosen tam levgam is aser. I'm Rav Sheshes Haimishcha Shliki Dharma. Okay, a cooked oil. So, Aser. So, Rav Sheshes says, if a non-Jew cooks oil, it's Aser. So the Gemara says, I don't understand that. I'm Rav Safala Maynech Shlai Misham Eruve Mistrasari. First of all, he won't add anything to the oil. Because by adding to the oil, and the Gemara over here is concerned specifically about wine. If you add wine to the oil, it's going to offend the oil. It's going to offend the taste of the oil. He wouldn't do that. What are you worried about? Bishul akum? There's no problem with bishul akum. Oil is eaten raw. Since oil is consumed raw, so therefore cooking does not make it prohibited. And what are you worried about? Taste from something else, from a non-kosher food, no same time of gam. It does not provide an enhanced flavor. It only provides a detrimental flavor, and so therefore it's going to be mutter. Okay? So, on all three counts...
But it's something that the pot was actually left unused for 24 hours.
So the Gemara doesn't talk about it. Tosfos here, the Bam Tosfos, does talk about it. Okay? But yes, Tosos does raise that issue. Okay. Bami name Rabbi Asi, ha ihani shlike darma mai. What about shlike beets? Right? We're talking about beets? No, I'm sorry, dates. Dates. Hani ihani shlike darma mai. So chuyiloti balach tavada shari. So if they're already sweet dates, meaning I would have eaten them without them being cooked, so then it's fine. Because him, by him cooking it, it's not bishlokim because it's nachal kamoshu chai. Because it could be in raw. Meriri, if they're bitter dates and they need to be cooked in order to be eaten, so then lo. I'm sorry, loti bailach devade asiri, that's for sure asr. Because I can't eat them without the cooking, so therefore it's subject to bishlokim. Kiti bailach mitzi ai, my. What if there's somewhere between sweet and date? Semi sweet, semi not sweet, whatever. Amalu Maiti Bailachu, the Rebbe Aser. Rebbe says that's no good. That's unacceptable. But Rebbe over here, Umanu Levi. Rebbe over here means Levi. Rebbe is just a term of reverence. In this particular case, it does not mean Rebbe Yehuda Nasi. It means Levi. Shesisa. Okay, we talk about the famous food Shesisa. Rashi gives us the recipe for Shesisa. Tavshala Aswi Mikemach Shal Klayos, Shiyav Shem Betanor. Dried up, parched lentils, parched flour, the yeshos and also mikemech hadashim. Some people make it from lentils. Ulefishay matukin yoter midai nosin sham chametz. It's too sweet, if you can imagine. And so what they did is to balance it, they threw in a little bit of vinegar. Now, obviously, the vinegar is a serious problem because vinegar was once upon a time wine. And as we learned, wine by a non-Jewish tam yenim, that's aser, not only aser, aser b'ana, and even after it turns to vinegar, it's still aser. So, shesisa, rav shari avud shmov levi asre. Various opinions amongst Amorayim, whether it's okay or not. If it is wheat or barley, that's fine, because they don't. There's no concern of them adding vinegar. If it is lentil and it was added, and vinegar was added, that for sure is aser, because that's vinegar and that's tam yenim. What if it was not mixed with vinegar, but it was rather mixed with water? So there shouldn't be a problem. But Marsavar Gazrinan Hatuha, Marsavar Lo Gazrinan. So the Gemara says it's a machlokas whether there is or there isn't a gzera. The Igadarm, the Gemara has another version of this discussion. Betafacha de Michael Amelo Pligi de Aser. Lentil with water, lentil shesisa, with water is Aser. Why? Because everyone agrees that there's a gzera. Ki pligi bechitiu sa'ari. The question now becomes wheat and barley. Marsav gazrinan hatua, marsav lo gazrinan. So the Gemara says the question is whether there's a gzera or not. Amarav treminishis yisashada barzilai giladi le David. Barzilai hagiladi sent two types of shesisa over to David when he was running away from his son. The pasuk says mishka v'safas v'chol yotz v'chitim usa'arim v'kemach v'kali upul v'adashim v'kali. Okay. Why the Gemara introduced that, I understand. We're talking about shesisa. What does that story add to our understanding? I don't know. Okay. V'hashu d'kamaf ke tzani tzani l'shuka d'narada v'leith t'chayish l'avua d'shmo v'levi. They bring shesisa out to the markets of Narada and we buy it. We buy the shesisa product out in the streets of Narada, and people do not worry about the psak of avua d'shmo v'levi who says it's aser. Okay. Kvashin shadarkan lasayis besochen yayin. Okay, from this point forward now, what we're going to do is we're going to go back to the Mishnah, Alamed Hay, and we're going to go just define what all these other things are that were mentioned in the Mishnah. A lot of the things that the Mishnah described are just to us foreign. And here we go. The first thing Gemara is going to discuss is Kvashim shadarkan lasayis besochen yayin. Pickled foods where wine was put in. Amr chizke loshano l'shadarkan. Ava b'yadu aser. Okay? If it is derech, if it's the way to do so, then fine. But if you know that vinegar went in, for sure it's going to be aser. Afilu b'hana. Not just to eat it, which the Mishnah already told us, but to get benefit from it. Now that makes perfect sense, because once you know that vinegar went in, vinegar is wine. It's the same thing. And so therefore, wine is also bahana, vinegar is also bahana. Or maishna mimors to shor rabban bahana. The Gemara says, what about Morius, right? Our fish fat, yeah, where we know wine went in, and according to the Chachamim, you can't eat it, but you can get benefit from it. So the Gemara says, hasam lavur is duhuma hachlam tuke. It's different. It's different. Over there, in the fish fat, the wine was over there because the odor that came out of the fish fat was strong, it was pungent, it was too much, and the wine was there just to dissipate. Over here, however, it was to enhance flavor, so therefore we treat it like wine, asr ba'achila, asr ba'hanam.
But I think you're still getting supposed to vinegar, even though it wasn't the intent.
But, right. I look at Rashi, the last Rashi on the page. The fact that you're pouring it in just to dissipate the strong odor, it's as if it's gone. It's as if it's lost. Rashi says, "Kamanda azol ibud." It's like it's lost. So from Rashi, it sounds like when it's put into the fish fat, you basically can ignore it, not to the point where you can eat it, but it does not have the full status of stam yenam. Rav Yochanan Amar Afil b'yadu anami mutar ma'ishna mimuris l'rameir da'aser b'hana. According to Rav Yochanan, even if you know that they put vinegar into this kvashim, you can't eat it. It's vinegar, but you can benefit from it. So the Gemara says, and now, how is that any different than Morius? Because according to Rav Meir, more, yes, it's asr b'hana. So the Gemara over here also makes a distinction. Hasam yada mamashu, hacha lo yada mamashan. Difference was like this. In the kvashim, when you pour the vinegar in, you don't see the vinegar anymore. There's no mamashas. In the moryas, when you pour the vinegar in, you still see the vinegar. There's still mamashas to the vinegar. That's why it's also, according to Rav Meir, asr b'achila and asr b'hana. Taris trufa v'tzir she'ein ba'daga. My chilak. The Gemara wants to know now, this type of fish known as the chilak. We talked about this a little bit earlier. Am rav nach maraba, am rav zu sultanit. So it's the sultanit fish. Now, sultanit is a kosher fish. Why is our Mishnah including that in a list of things that we're not allowed to eat? Mimnei she'irvuna ola ima. This sultanit, it's an interesting fish. In its early developmental stages, it does not have scales. Scales only grow on it later on. And it's a kosher fish, right? From the Gemara's perspective, it's absolutely kosher even before the scales develop. But because it's a non-scaled fish in its early development, sometimes what happens is other non-scale fishes get mixed in with it, and you cannot differentiate because they're both non-scale fish. And so therefore, chiluk in its undeveloped stage is aser because of a possible mixture. Tana Rabbanan in lo achshav asi li gadel lachar zman kigon hasultanit v'ha'afitz harei zeh moter. If you have a type of fish where the scales grow later in its life, fine. Meaning it's a kosher fish. Yesh lo achshav asi lahashir b'shar sh'olam min hayam kigon akunas v'apunas katas pastayas. The ach stapayas. I feel like I'm reading the Megillah right now. The utanas mutter. If you have a fish where it was born with scales and it shed its scales, and I don't know enough about the marine world to know. Do we have fish like that nowadays? I don't know. But in huh?
I think not.
Trout lose its scales.
These are all Greek names.
I really will trust you on this. I do not know. So the Gemara says that's also okay. That's fine as well. So it's interesting. The scale requirement of fish in order to make it a kosher fish does not have to be scales for life. Scales later in its development, scales early in its development, as long as at one point historically had scales.
That's how we evolved.
Yeah, and that is the halacha. No, this is not wine anymore. This is just, no, these are just foods that you can't buy from a non-Jew.
I understand what you're saying. Why would it be right to buy them? The issue is that you're going to accept the other types of fish.
Right. Because you can't tell the difference. They don't have, in other words, at the early stages, we're talking about the sultanit. In the early stages, you can't tell the difference.
What's the difference with the seller of
I guess with the Jewish seller, you're going to be more trustful of him that he's only going to be selling you sultanit. The non-Jew is he doesn't care. It doesn't matter. It doesn't make a difference to him. I assume that's the difference. Achriz Rabbi Abba b'Kesari kariv v'dagim v'uvran nikhan mikol adam. If you're in Kesari and you want to buy kirve dagim fish guts. Right, and anyone buying fish guts for Yontif? If you do so, he says in Kesari it's not a problem. We work with a presumption over there. It's an interesting presumption that those fish only come from one supplier or from one geographic location. Plusia Aspamia. Sometimes I assume Aspania is Spain. I don't know if I'm right about that. Sounds similar, something like that. Kiadam Rabaye Hatzachanta the Bavnara Sharya. The Tzachanta that comes out of the rivers, the Bavnahara is permissible. My Tama Ili Lema Mishum Duridifa Mai Vahai Dag Tama Kem Galesu Chut Hashedra Beduchta Duridifa Mai Lamati Kai. I'm sorry, Pir Kama. The Gemara says, why are you so confident that there's no non-kosher fish that's netted in these areas? So the Gemara makes an interesting suggestion. Well, maybe because the waters run so fast, and because the non-kosher fish don't have a, literally, a chut hashedra, a backbone, so they can't they can't fight against the current. The Gemara says that's a nice idea, but look, empirically we see they're out there. Even in the fast running waters, the non kosher fish are out there. Ela mishum de milcha, mishum de maliche maya. So the Gemara says and makes another suggestion. Well, the water is very salty water. Non-kosher fish simply cannot habitat in the salty waters. Again, the Gemara says, "Vaka chazina dekai." Gemara says again, that's a nice idea, but empirically we see otherwise. Okay, el mishum de lomar betina dag tame. I'm sorry, de lomar betina dag tame. Apparently, there's some sort of minerals in the water where non-kosher fish cannot survive in such type of water. Okay, Am Ravina Ha'ida de Kashafche be Narguza ve Naragamda Asire. So again, there was a water source where the Gemara, at one point historically, were absolutely confident, just simply based on the dynamics of the water source, that there's no non-kosher fish. The Gemara says, once upon a time that was true, not anymore. Two rivers were channeled into this one particular water source, and so therefore it introduced non-kosher fish into this river source. Amar Abaye, Hai Chamra Diyama, Share. Type of...
Seahorse?
That's what he translates it as.
Sea donkey.
Sea donkey. Ich weiß nicht. But if it's a ox fish, it's going to be aser. Gemara is obviously describing some sort of, you know, the shape of the fish. I mean, we know of a seahorse, so the Gemara is describing some sort of fish that existed back then. But it's interesting, and the Gemara is going to note the irony that the fish that looks like a kosher animal is non-kosher, and the fish that looks like a non-kosher animal is kosher. And the Gemara hits on that irony. V'simancha tametar tar tame. That's the way to remember it. Amravashi shfarnuna shari. A type of fish called shfarnuna is permissible. Kadosh nuna asar. And the fish known as kadosh nuna is asar. And again, the irony of the holy fish being asar, v'simancha kadosh la Hashem. And it's a cute simon. It's a mnemonic, right? If it's kodesh, it goes to God. You can't eat it. that's the simon. Ikadami kavernuna asur. The kavernuna, which is another type of fish, is asur. And again, the Gemara is going to do a play on words to help us remember. V'simancha kivre of de kochavim, graves of de kochavim. It is a strange mnemonic because all graves are prohibited, not just graves of a non-Jew. Okay. Rabbi Kiva ikla leginzak. Rabbi Kiva went to Ginzak. I'll remind each other what we saw in Tosus earlier. This is probably not Rabbi Akiva, right? This is Rabbi Akiva's a Tana, and the Gemara doesn't just simply go into a story of a Tana without giving an introduction of Tanya or Tana or, right? It's a little bit strange, right? Tosus said earlier, this is probably Mar Ukva. Either way, Rabbi Akiva Ekel Ginzak Aisel Kame Hahununa Dehavadam El Chipusha. There was a fish that was brought to him. The scales were not visible. He rubbed the side of the fish against some sort of basket, and scales rubbed off. So they were not visible, but they were there. And Rabbi Kiva says those are also acceptable. Those are good scales, therefore it's a kosher fish. Rav Ashi ikla litam durya. By the way, fish is the most interesting of the animals because the animal department, in the bird department, the simanim is not what does it for us. In other words, it's really based on a tradition, especially with birds. Right, by birds, it's for sure Masara. Right, by animals, the Torah talks about split hooves and chewing its cud. But again, we work a lot with tradition. With fish, you see from the Gemara, for them, it was empirical. Are there scales or are there no scales? And that's it. And that's all you need to know. Right? And once there's scales, and what we learned this morning is, if they're not there for the whole life of the fish, even if they're not discernible to the eye, but, you know, they're there, and there's some, you know, empirical way of seeing that they're there, that fish is okay. Rav Ashi ikla tam dura, aisel kameh ununa dahavidam litzlufcha. So he had a fish. By the way, Nuna is a fish. You know how you know that also? Nineveh. Right?
Oh, yeah.
Nineveh is, right, I know the city of Nineveh, but their god was the god of fish. Okay? So, Nuna David, Dami Lim Litzlufcha, Nakti Lahadi Yumachaza Dahavabe, Tsimche Visharye. Again, he tweaked out some very fine scales and by leaving it out in the sun. And good. And he said, it's fine. Avashik lalahu asra isla kame nuna davidamalis shafar nuna. So he had another fish. It looked like shafar nuna, which I guess is a non-kosher species. Chafya bimashichle chivre chazebekalpe. And again, he wiped it against a white basket, and the scales came out. No, I'm sorry. He didn't wipe it. He just looked at it. Sorry. He looked at it through a white basket, and he saw the scales. Okay. Rabba bar Barchana ikla le'akor de agma kreva leit sachanta. So they brought him sachanta.
It's the grown up Caleb.
What are we discussing over here?
It says which is a kosher chelek fish. So it must have been a big one.
Okay. So kreva leit sachanta shamilahu gar v'dav kare le bate. Okay. Sachanta is a kosher fish, but some people are calling it bate. And bate is a non-kosher fish. Amar, so it's a little bit strange. In other words, they brought me kosher fish, but they're calling it bate, which back then apparently was a well-known non-kosher fish. Amar mindika karle bate shmamina dvartame isbe. I got to worry about that. That's something I need to worry about. So he therefore he didn't eat it, even though presumably it looked like it was a kosher fish. And the next morning he found that there was some non-kosher fish mixed in with it. And kari anafshe lo ye'una letzadik kol oven. Nothing bad will happen to a tzadik. It does sound like he's referring to himself as a tzadik, but the idea is that he felt protected. Hakari shachit says, okay, we get to now another big topic in kashrus, and that is cutting with the knife. Okay? We'll do this topic today, and it seems to be that'll be the end of today. The Mishnah says that Karisho Chiltus, Chiltus is a type of spice you can't buy from a non-Jew. You can't eat it, and now it's a spice. What's the problem? My time, Mishum Demastik Le Besakina. They cut it with a knife, and so what? Alpha Gavda Amar Mar No Saint Tom of Gam Mutter. Now we know that No Saint Tom of Gam is Mutter. That once the taste is rancid, so it's no longer a concern. And that's true, but Agev Khorfe de Khil Tasi, Machli Le Shamnanuse, Vahavile Ken No Saint Tom Leshevach. But the sharpness of this spice, this chiltus, I don't know how it translates into English. And it's actually important if I did know how to translate to English. But the sharpness of this spice will take the No Saint Tam of Gam and it will convert it into shvach. Okay? The Aser, and therefore it's going to be prohibited. Okay. From this Gemara, it's very clear that even though the taste is a rancid taste, but sharpness of the spice converts it into a non-rancid taste. Okay, where do we go with this in terms of halacha? First of all, there are two big machlokes for Sharnim over here. Number one, the knife. In order for taste to transfer, so you need two things. You need heat, and you need a medium in terms of how it's going to transfer. Over here, when you're cutting with the knife, where's the heat? What heat are we talking about? So, the Rashba's of the opinion, this is Yoredeah, this is all in the world of Yoredeah. Rashba's of the opinion that when you cut with a knife, the cutting of the knife creates friction. And the friction is heat. Right? And that's the opinion of the Rashba, huh?
But it's not enough heat to cook with. I mean, it doesn't cook.
The Rashba is a Chiddush. And I'll tell you why the Rashba is even a bigger Chiddush. Because if you go back to the Gemara, you read the Gemara carefully, Mechar Yalei Sham Nenusei. Right, the Gemara here is talking about the fat, right? According to the Rashba, there's no fat. In other words, it's the taste imbued in the knife. But notwithstanding the Rashba's opinion, is that we're talking about the taste and beauty of the knife, and the transfer is created via the heat. Where's the heat? Through the friction of the knife going back and forth. That's the opinion of the Rashba. Other Rishonim do not agree with the Rashba, but nevertheless, the halacha is like the Rashba. Right? Shulchan Aruch Pasan is like the Rashba, that when you cut with a knife and you're going back and forth, so that friction is going to create a transfer of taste. But it has to be cutting sharp foods, like what we're discussing over here. The other big machlok is amongst...
Cutting your watermelon is not an issue.
Not going to be an issue. They're not going to be an issue. The other issue that the Rishonim deal with is what sharp foods are going to create this transfer. So here in our Gemara, the Gemara only discusses one thing, and that's chiltis. And I don't know what it is, but apparently it was a very sharp food. Is this also going to be true by milder sharp foods, like an onion, like a radish, right? Like a pepper, like a lemon, right? A lemon also may be a sharp food. So again, the Shulchan Aruch also there as well says it will. In other words, you cut an onion, the assumption going in is that there is going to be a transfer of taste. And keep in mind now, because what we just learned from our Gemara is that no sin tam of gam, although generally is mutter, but when it comes to sharp foods, right, we don't work with that, with those rules anymore. So even if the knife is an older knife and it cuts a sharp food, it's going to imbue a taste into the food. The servant of Rav Levi was Sel Chiltasa. Now he's a servant of Rabbi Levi, which means that the knives that he used were good knives, were not non-kosher knives. Now, Rav Levi died. So can I go and still buy Chiltas from the attendant of Levi? His master is no longer alive. Can I buy from him anymore? Sure you can. He's been trained by a chaver. You could treat him like a chaver. Rav Huna bar Minyuma purchased Tchelis from the members of the household of Rav Amram. Tchelis also had kashrus issues, right? We're talking about the blue dye that you put on your tzitzis.
Edible?
No. What the kashrus issue over there was that there was a fake blue dye that was running around back then. It was called Kala Ilan. And when we get to Menachos, we're going to talk a lot about it. And the fake blue dye that was circulating back then looked and smelled almost exactly like Tchelis. And the people were going around, it was the cubic zirconia of their day. And people were going around and selling the Kala Ilan. So if you bought Tchelis, you had to buy it from a reliable source. So the Gemara says that these members of the household of Rav Huna were selling Tchelis. Okay or not okay? Also coming to Rav Yosef, Lohava Biade, Pagge Bechanan, Yosef, Ani Menale, I bought it from members of the household of Rabbana, Achua de Rabbi Chia, Baraba, Vasal Kamad Rav Matna, Lohava Biyade, he didn't know if that was a reliable source or not. Asal Kamad Rav Yehuda, Mehagrunya, Amrali Nafat Liad Hachi, Amr Shmuel, and finally this goes all the way back to Shmuel, Ashes Divrei Chaver Harei Kachaver, the wife of a Chaver is like a Chaver. If you buy from the wife of a Talmud Chacham, that's a reliable source, and you can assume it's Tcheles, and it's fine. Ditan Rabban, we'll finish this morning with this. Eishes Chaver, no, stop it. Eishes Chaver, Hareu Kechaver, Abdush Chaver, Hareu Kechaver. That the wife of a Talmud Chacham, the attendant, the servant of a Talmud Chacham, gets all rights, privileges of the Talmud Chacham. In fact, even after the person dies, his wife still enjoys the pristine reputation of being the wife of a chaver. And in the courtyard where tchelas is sold, once a place is reputed to be a good and legitimate place of operation, and they sell tchelas, unless otherwise known, you can assume that it's a good place, that it's an acceptable place to go and buy. Good. Tomorrow we'll continue with the idea of Eishes Chaver Harei Kechaver. Tomorrow we're also going to get on to sealing and packaging kosher foods. Big day coming up tomorrow.